Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. This is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, the Lions defeated the Green Bay Packers 31-0 at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Very unimpressive victory, although they did hold Aaron Rodgers to 26 yards passing and a concussion, so that's a full day.
Yeah, I think Aguara should get a extension immediately for
concussing him.
Yeah, why not?
I'm not big into the forcible injuries of other players. I know he probably didn't try to do it.
Yeah, no. Look, if you injure someone, I don't think you should get a raise unless
you play for Greg Williams.
Hey, if you can injure Greg Williams, you deserve a bonus.
All right, so trivia question for Eric. The Lions have now defeated the Packers four consecutive times, although under auspicious circumstances. When's the last time the Lions have defeated the Packers four times in a row?
Oh, gosh. 70s? That would be my guess.
Well, you're close. Yeah. They did it with all within less than 365 days. Those who know math would say maybe even less than 330. From the moment I was born, about 6 months, 5 months later, they defeated the Packers on December 12th of 1982 and then won the next three right after that, culminating in a November 20th victory at the Pontiac Silverdome 38-14. So that's the last, 23-20.
You were the good luck turn.
I wouldn't say that. but that's the last time they beat them four times in a row. We had a discussion over the weekend last time they shut out the Packers, 1973.
Correct.
Yeah, and that was in Pontiac, or no, that would have been at Tiger Stadium, and then time before that was 1970 in Lambeau.
Correct.
This is all useless stats.
Fun stats.
No, normally how we, and also securing the 8th overall draft pick, we might be able to talk about that later.
Yeah.
All right. Normally we open the show with the Lions injury report news, but now that the season's over, we don't have to do that. Although TJ Lang and Ziggy Ansah are out, I will mention that. All right, so first we're going to start with the thanks for the courtesy. All right. First, we're going to start off with the search for an offensive coordinator because the Lions have, quote-unquote, parted ways with Jim Bob Cooter.
Yeah.
Nobody gets fired. Nobody resigns anymore.
Well, they technically, parted
ways. Well, they didn't renew his contract, correct. So he's not fired.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, so, but you read between the lines. Also got rid of offensive assistant Darius Swinton, who was helping out heavily in special teams.
Yeah, you know, well, he was a guy who had some ties. Cooter, I think, went to bat for him to bring him in. So I think that's why he left the building with Jim Bob.
So Jim Bob's gone. Now we need a new offensive coordinator. There's a bunch of candidates that have surfaced. The one that fears Lions fans the most, but with an asterisk, because now there's a new candidate emerging. And it's not, thank goodness it's not Dave Warner. That's the one that would really put the fear of whatever into Lions fans. Number one, George Godsey, the current quarterback coach.
Yeah, so we're going to have the first six in an article on Lions Wire for a little bit more detail on them. But yeah, Godsey is the obvious first name that's going to come up because he's currently on staff as the quarterback's coach, and he previously coached as the offensive coordinator for the Texans, and he was with the Patriots before that. He left with Bill O'Brien when O'Brien took the head coach in Houston. Then he was fired, came here as a defensive assistant, helping them understand the offensive side of the game for a year, and then flipped over to quarterback's coach. With Godsey, though, he is a guy who's a holdover from before Patricia, and I've been told all holdovers are vulnerable. So while I know a lot of people are saying Godsey makes sense to be promoted,
he's got Patriot ties.
Yep. And I think he's equally as likely to be gone as he is to be promoted. I think it's 50-50 right now. I think a lot of the offensive staff is vulnerable. And there's still a possibility that they're leaning towards him. But as we've talked about several times on this show, if they were interested in Godsey, they would have fired Cooter mid-season and given him a shot to see what he could do. And they haven't done that, which tells me, if you read between the lines, I think he's a little bit more vulnerable than what people are in the media are saying right now.
All right, next, Chad O'Shea. I wanted to say Chad O.J., the former reliever of the Cleveland Indians. New England wide receivers coach, 46 years old.
Yeah, O'Shea's interesting. The thing that's the most interesting is that he was considered the next offensive coordinator in line when McDaniels pulled his little whoop-de-doo last year on Indianapolis. When he told Indy he was going to sign with them, they announced it, and then he went, oh, just kidding, I'm going to go back to New England. O'Shea was the guy who was supposed to be the next offensive coordinator for the Patriots. So, stayed in the receiver role, and so he's just kind of hanging out there. But again, while McDaniels is getting, his name's getting floated around for other head coaching jobs, man, I don't know how you trust him after what he did to Indy last year. And I feel like he went back, and this again is speculation, I feel like he went back to New England because he was told, hey, you can be the heir apparent to Bill. And O'Shea's just now left holding the bag, not knowing when all this is going to unfold. So that could be a move where people say, where it would make a lot of sense for him to move over. I don't know if it's the sexiest move out there, but it's one that makes a lot of sense, and in my opinion, more sense than Godsey.
All right, next up, Dirk Cutter, the fired Tampa Bay head coach. Dirk Cutter holds a special place in my heart because he restored my faith in NFL coaches by following up Jeff Fisher's performance on Hard Knocks, where Fisher was wearing the flip-flops. He had the basically empty office with the computer that was set up, but it was always that screensaver with like the Windows logo just bouncing around on the screen. Whereas Dirk Cutter at least pretended to be a head coach. He had that office. It had smart TVs. He had a big whiteboard with all the players on it. He had notebooks. Uh-huh. Like, you know, he had binders all over his desk. It's like, this guy looks like he's into being a head coach, you know, and he's terrible, you know. So there's a piece that one thing he does do well or has tradition of doing well is coaching offense. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, no. Well, okay. And I hate that I'm in this corner right now, but the only defense I can say for, and I'm defending Jeff Fisher here for a second, which is
he made it to a Super Bowl. I can't argue that. And he won one as a player.
His coaching office was, they were temporary.
Yeah, I know. Because they just moved. I watched the season.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, Miami Fisher's terrible. But you hit on a nice point. And that Cutter is an excellent offensive coach. He was really good in Atlanta as an OC before he went to Tampa. Last two seasons in Tampa, Tampa has finished third and ninth in offensive yards. He runs a vertical offense. They're aggressive, and the defense is really the problem in Tampa Bay. It's not the offense. The offense does well, and with the style of head coaching that Patricia has, naturally just kind of gravitating towards the defense, it is very appealing to me to want an offensive-minded former head coach to be an offensive coordinator with them, because Patricia can then shift a little bit away, and you know that you have a guy who's been there and that's established, and so he brings a little bit more security for me than a new offensive coordinator would, like in O'Shea.
All right, next up, we got a couple of Rams guys coming here. Zach Taylor, current quarterback coach, co-offensive coordinator, youngster by coaching standards, not by McVay standards, but by coaching standards, 35 years old.
Yeah, he's a hot name. Head coaching talk with him right now. Arizona and Denver have both asked to interview him as a head coach. So if he doesn't get that, there's possibility he could be in line for a promotion as an offensive coordinator by himself in somewhere else. I think he'll be a name Detroit will be interested in, but he doesn't have the ties that the other Rams guy does.
Next Rams guy is Shane Waldron, current passing game coordinator, also co-offensive coordinator, 39 years old. It's great that they're both co-offensive coordinators, but McVay calls all the plays.
Yeah, right? You know, that's why they can be the co-offensive coordinators. It's basically McVay saying,
giving them a good job title for when they move on to become the offensive coordinator of teams like the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, exactly. The thing with Waldron is that he used to coach in New England, right? And so the guys are familiar with him. He's a former tight end. He's been a tight ends coach before. Was he a tight ends coach? I'm blanking on what he, if that was his role in New England.
It says right here, tight ends coach.
But I'm trying to remember if that was in New England or at his next stop.
Well, you keep talking.
But he also has experience coaching special teams. Waldron makes a little bit more sense considering what they want to do. You know, him and O'Shea and Taylor are all these first-year guys who, while they would be exciting because Typically, your first year guys bring a lot of new nuances to the game and make things exciting. There is a little bit of trepidation with bringing in a new guy into this coaching staff, I guess.
In 2009, is the tight ends coach at New England.
There you go.
Before moving on to the United Football League with Hartford Colonials. All right, next guy, Sean Ryan, Texans quarterback coach, 46 years old.
He had interviews with the Vikings and the Browns last year for an offensive coordinator position, and he didn't get picked by either.
They picked John DeFilippo instead over with the Vikings, and saw what happened to him.
And the Browns picked Kitchens, right? And so
people like Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, they do. And so, yeah, he was a Giants wide receiver coach prior to that, prior to his job in Houston. But he's, again, there's some ties to the Texans, right? Because Bill O'Brien is their coach. And so O'Brien came from, like we talked about earlier, the Patriots. And so there's a similar mentality, I guess, that goes in. So when you look at the Texans coaching staff, there's going to be some connections that will, you know, kind of crossbreed over here into the Lions staff that they'll be interested in some of these guys. Plus, they just hired Jimmy Ray from the Texans to be in the
former
front office.
Former Spartan great.
Right. And so he's in the front office, so he's going to be familiar with Sean Ryan here as well. So a few guys on this list that I think it's a really good list. This was originally put – this is – Jeff wrote the article. Lions Wire team all contributed in putting this together. But there's a few more names that I wanted to touch on that we didn't include in that six-piece coaching offensive coordinator search.
Well, from mentioning Jimmy Ray, former Spartan, to another, although not a Spartan great, Adam Gase, former Miami head coach.
Yeah, now he's also lined up for head coaching interviews.
I think that's where he'll end up. That's just my feeling. But go ahead.
It's very,
as a head coach.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, Green Bay's interested, Arizona Jets. There was even talk that he was interested in Cleveland, but one of the reasons that Jarvis Landry left Miami was because he didn't get along with Adam Gase.
They can just get rid of Jarvis Landry again.
Well, they just signed him to a big deal, right? So that I don't know how that would work.
Pittsburgh might need a wide receiver, although they probably wouldn't trade with each other as their rivals.
Right. But Gase is very appealing to me. He's from Ypsilanti. Like you said, MSU, went to LSU with Saban when Saban left Michigan State. And we've talked in the past about how he was a Denver offensive coordinator with Jim Bob. So the language of the scheme would translate very easily. Wouldn't be a lot of disruption to what they have on offense. But he's a more aggressive coach than Cooter is. And the big appeal with Gase, again, is like with Coder, he's a former head coach. So you can trust him a little bit more to be able to handle some of the responsibilities unsupervised, I guess is the right term.
The wildest name on this list for me, Vance Joseph, former Denver head coach, but a defensive coordinator.
I put him in just when I was making the list. That's not what I meant. I didn't mean to.
Oh, I thought that's what you meant. I thought you were going to talk about it. I mean, wackier things have happened.
Yeah, originally when I was making this list, I was going to talk about defense, and I put him in because he was another coach. He's not an offensive coordinator. He wouldn't be in the mix for that.
I could see him end up being a head coach again as well. I mean, he didn't get a very long tryout in Denver, although one can say he had very little success for somebody with such a great defense.
Yeah, the scheme doesn't really translate, but there's some ideas that are behind it. I do think he'd be a guy that they'd like to go after if we promoted Cunningham to the front office like we talked about previously. But yeah, I included him in the middle of this instead of at the end. That was my fault.
All right, next up, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, former head coach at USC in Washington, was last an Atlanta Falcons offensive coordinator. He was just fired. I'm not as high on this on him, but again, it's a name, and so it's somebody that could easily get he's going to get a job somewhere. It's just a matter of where. Just a name to keep in mind. I'm not again.
He's had some substance abuse problems in his past, but maybe he's passed them.
The USC debacle was a very big debacle.
All right, finally, we mentioned him before, Freddie Kitchens, current Browns offensive coordinator, but they're going to eventually have a new head coach. Why not him?
He's interviewing with them. He is interviewing for the Browns head coaching job right now. I believe he might even been doing it today. And it's possible that they retain him. The Browns front office has said that they're interested in retaining him. Teams have reached out to the Browns to ask to interview him, and the Browns have said no because they're considering him for their head coaching job right now. Now, Rappaport went on TV and said that teams were interested and the Browns were saying no, and then he listed a bunch of open offensive coordinator positions, one of them being the Lions. And so I think there was a little there was a bit of a misconstrue where people thought he was getting the Lions asked about him. They might have. I don't know. It has not been confirmed. I reached out to two people. One of them said they didn't think the Lions did, but it would. Everyone got denied anyways. And the other one said that they didn't think it was true. So maybe.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say maybe it happened, but maybe it didn't.
We should note that when you're an offensive coordinator, if you're a certain level of coach in the NFL and another team wants to interview you for the open position at the same level of coach, the team that currently already holds them under contract can block the interview. Just as a note.
Correct.
We got a question from Dustin Blackwell. Are we waiting for offensive coordinator candidates on playoff teams to be available? Why no word on candidates or interviews?
Well, you just kind of got to that, right? If you want to interview a position coach. Okay, head coaches are different too, right? If you want to interview a head coach, there's all these rules that go along with
it. Sure, but if you eventually want to make a trade, if you want like, somebody else's head coach.
Like the Raiders. No, but it, like if all these guys that are interviewing for head coaching jobs, like Gase and we talked about Zach Taylor and that, and whatnot, they're allowed, when you're making a move that is a promotion, like to a head coaching job, you can interview right now.
Yeah, sure.
But you like you pointed out, the other position coaches and the other coordinators, they need permission, and the playoff teams aren't giving permission for those things right now. And so that's why we're waiting. If the Lions are interested in O'Shea or Taylor or Waldron or Ryan, you got to wait on all those guys, right? And if not, but there's other guys that are more free agents that we could get a better look at. It's just a matter of, everything's quiet right now. So it's just a matter of we're going to have to wait, and we'll probably hear something after the fact.
All right, JC, the longer the better on naming an offense coordinator, meaning no simple choice such as God's sake.
I think so. I think patience is key, and so we're going to have to really wait until we – I don't even know. Next week might be a good week to see, you know, who becomes more available.
Brandon Kerr, what type of offense suits Stafford the best? Bill Walsh, Eric Coryell, or Ron Earhart? That is, of course, an offensive coordinator to fit his needs. That's a loaded question.
Well, okay, so he's basically talking stylistically. Who's going to bring?
No, I got you there.
Right? And so,
give me Eric Coryell all the time.
Eric Coryell is the originator, right, of the passing offense, right? And he was very aggressive, downfield, vertical type offense.
The old San Diego Chargers starring Dan Fouts.
Yeah, and the problem with his scheme is that you need talent at all the skill positions. And Bill Walsh knew that that wasn't, sustainable. And that's why Walsh created the West Coast, right? Because it's a similar style to Eric Coryell's, but you don't need as talented of players. You can. There's also a lot more quick passing, and they still go vertical, but not. It's more get the ball out quick type of thing. they're similar styles of offense. I like the vertical pass set for Stafford better than the West Coast style that we got from Walsh. But the Earnhardt one is interesting because that goes back to what, 70s, 80s.
We're talking about a lot of outdated offenses.
Yeah.
I know. I think we're just talking about philosophy.
Right. Not. And so this philosophy was using the run to set up the pass. But then in like 2011, Belichick kind of realized it was outdated and updated. Oh, but I should mention, this is the offense the Patriots run. He overhauled it in 2011. He changed it up with more tempo, uses more no huddle. And so if you're looking for a guy like O'Shea, right? Or Godsey. They're going to run more of this run to set up the pass type of thing. But if you're looking for the more verticals, you're looking at a quarter and you're looking at the Rams guys. Personally, the Lions are looking for balance, right? That's pretty much what they've gone after. And that's what they've been talking about all season. And now even in the postseason, they're trying to find balance. And they're trying to get used to run to set that balance up. But what I would like is I would like to see them be able to go more vertical. That plays into Stafford's strengths. Another reason why, the more I think about it, the more I think that that Coder from Tampa Bay makes some a lot more sense to me. You could argue that Gase is in that same boat because he doesn't mind going vertical as well. But I keep leaning from a favorite standpoint of one of those former head coaches, and him or Gase.
All right, moving on to more coaching staff talk. Keen Observation says, everybody says it's a passing league, but look at the 10 best passing seasons ever, and exactly none of those quarterbacks won a Super Bowl that year. Rodgers, Breeze, Peyton, coincidentally, won the Super Bowl the years they had the best running games to complement. Can we debunk this myth? Balance wins. Well, that's true. I picked up this stat. I always track it every year, and I believe out of the top 11 rushing offenses in the NFL, 8 of those teams find themselves in the playoffs.
It sounds about right. Right.
And last year it was 9 of the top 12.
Okay. And Patricia, at his end of year press conference, he's talked about that as well. He talked about wanting it to be a run offense that can control the clock, control the ball, and if you can run, then you can establish the game. And I 100% believe that. Now,
wait, but there's more to this.
Yes, and now that's where Patricia ended, but there is more to this. You need to be able to have a passing offense as well, because if you don't have a passing offense, then you get what you had with the Lions this year, where as soon as the running back goes down, you're done. Especially when your play calling is still doesn't adjust, right? And so you do need balance, right? And running is important because running is what wins late in December. Running is what ends up getting you to the playoffs. But by no means do you need to disregard the passing output as well. That's why when you have these vertical offenses that are a little bit more aggressive, that's what's appealing to me with Stafford, is because he has the arm to go vertical. He has the accuracy to go vertical. And going deep is something he's done successfully in the past. He did it with Linehan, right? And so balance is definitely the key. I agree with that. But everybody, 2 years ago, everybody was running wins. And then now this year, everybody's passing offenses win because they watch what Kansas City does, right? And they think that's the way to do it. But balance is really the key.
Yeah, and they're big-time passing offenses. Kansas City was 16th, Chargers 15th, so there's two more teams that are in the top half of the league. So 10 of the 12 playoff teams are in the top half of the league. Coincidentally enough, the last two teams in, the 2 6 seeds, are Indianapolis and Philadelphia, and they're number 20 and number 28, respectively, when it comes to running the football. So there still is a lot of truth of the necessity of running the football, and we'll see over the next 4 weeks if passing rules the day or if we're going to see a lot of running the football. We've got good weather this weekend, so we still might see a game that's fairly reminiscent of what we've seen all season, but a little more amped up because, you know, the playoff pressure and all of that. All right, Jimmy's got a question. So much talk about quote-unquote modernizing NFL offenses in order to compete. But look at the places like Baltimore, New England, Jacksonville last year, and others that seem to be doing just fine with traditional play action and short crossing patterns. Which approach do you guys think is best for our personnel?
I think, again, we've kind of
talked
on this,
about
right?
The stats about the play action and how Stafford was fifth in the NFL.
And he was first last year.
And he was first the year before with play action, which is fine. I don't know if that's necessarily the way they have to keep going, but there's some track record, although the offense hasn't been great the last 2 years.
Look, if you can get the philosophy of the team is going to be to establish the run, and if you can get an offensive coordinator that will take vertical shots and be aggressive, then that's a nice mix. And that's really, I think, what you can do. The short crossing patterns will all depend on personnel. If they go out and they try and get a Golden Tate, then yeah, you need that. But if I could also see them going out and getting a athletic move tight end as their number three option. And if you get that, verticals make a lot more sense with the guys that you have. So personnel decisions will definitely be dictated by the coach, but I think the personnel decisions they want to make will dictate which coach they bring into the fold as well.
All right. Now we're going to do a little we got one more question from Brian.
Okay.
Seems like not enough praise for Jeff Davidson and the outstanding job he did in the run game. Mm-hmm. Do you see him expounding on what he's accomplished with even more success from unpredictable play calling? Okay, no, Kerryon Johnson did miss the last chunk of the season. Lions still finished 23rd overall in rushing offense at about 103 yards per game, which is about a 33-35% improvement over last season.
And we talked
is
about
that astounding? No. 4.1 yards per carry.
But you remember what we talked about at the beginning of the season. We said the Lions have been 30th or 32nd in rushing for years now. And if they could get up into the early 20s, then we would said we would consider that a success. And
yeah, no, that's true. I'm not saying Brian's statement is crazy by calling it astounding, but it's still not the greatest thing that's ever happened.
I think
it's good to see improvement.
The nice thing about Davidson is that he is comfortable adjusting and altering his scheme to different styles of offense. So depending on which coordinator comes in, I still think he's going to fit.
All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about the Bob Quinn press conference.
We get to what we get.
All right. Kyle Klein asks, what's your biggest takeaway from Bob Quinn's press conference this morning?
Yeah, tough one.
He doesn't have much to say.
Yeah, well, he talked for almost 45 minutes. At one point, Eamon Reynolds, the Lions media guy. Excellent guy. He's the one who gave me his shot at getting into the Lions. And I owe him a lot of credit for what I did. He does a phenomenal job. For what I've been able to do, what he did for me. Sorry.
Give him a lot of credit for what you did.
I give him a lot of credit for allowing me to do what I do this season, allowing me to get the access that I do. He's been terrific. He was trying to shut Quinn off and allow Quinn an out, and Quinn said, I've got time. I want to answer all your questions. And he stayed and he took more questions, and he was open and thoughtful, and he was very honest, and it was he's so fabulous with the media, especially compared to Patricia. And he doesn't talk to the media. And I really think his concept is, I don't want to talk to the media because in-season is Patricia's time. Off-season, I'll talk to you guys because that's more my time. But the thing is if he talks to the media...
He should probably change his... Or go ahead, keep going.
But if he talks to the media after Golden Tate...
Yeah, I think it takes care of a lot of things.
It takes care of a lot of things. If he talks to the media after the snacks deal, if he talks a little bit more during the season, the way that he's able to articulate and the way that he's able to solve problems the way he does, he would really help out a lot. I think he didn't want to overshadow Patricia, but I think his presence is should be a little bit more than it is right now, because the way that he sat there and answered questions, it's amazing. What he solved in 45 minutes today is stuff that people have been sitting on for 9 months. You know what I mean? So my favorite part of the whole press conference was just what he's able to do when he's up there. You know, like now, as far as what he talked about, you know, he doubled down on Stafford, which we all expected, saying Stafford's the guy. He talked about Patricia being the guy who's going to pick the new offensive coordinator. So that makes sense. A very interesting point was he talked about what he's looking for in a new offensive coordinator, which is an offensive coordinator who is willing to adapt its personnel, willing to adapt its scheme to the personnel that the Lions have and the defense that they're facing. Basically illustrating that Cooter wasn't able to do that, and that's why Cooter's gone. And that makes a lot of sense. So again, this is another element of why I think a head coach is very interesting to me. And while it won't be as flashy, a former head coach will be able to handle those things a little bit more successfully in my mind. He took responsibility for the season. He said, I know a lot of people have made it out to be that 6-10 is worse than 9-7, but he said, we didn't make the playoffs either year, so both years are failures.
Oh, wow, what a way to craft around it.
Oh, yeah, brilliant, right?
That was more sarcastic.
Well, I liked it. I'm like, that. Look, that shuts people. That shuts the door. Does it? Is 9-7 better than 6-10? Absolutely. Everyone knows that. But you know what? He's bottom-lining this, right? In my mind.
Well, it's easy. He's not going to have to talk again for 365 days. Yeah, I'll take all the
responsibility. No, he has to talk it in Indy at the Combine.
Great. But they're just going to talk about prospects, and they're going to talk about his strategy for draft. Like, maybe. They're not going to talk about all this other stuff. This stuff's going to go away. People are going to be too interested in who they're getting.
Maybe. He was very open about the needs at tight end. He was very open about the Snacks trade. He was very open about the Golden Tate trade.
Good. Well, like you said, he should have done it at the time.
Well, you know what, though?
Not the tight end thing. That could have waited the end of the
year.
The two trades. No, and you already said it. We don't have to go over it again.
I do like what he did. I was very impressed with what he did today.
All right, Guitar Hero Russ is a sexual assault storyline with Patricia still a concern. It's been a whole season, and Quinn was still questioned in the presser. Will this forever be a watermark on the Patricia coaching era, no matter the length of his tenure? Well, no. If they win, it won't be. Everybody will forget in a hurry. If they continue losing, yes, it'll certainly be a watermark. For me, it'll always be a watermark because this stuff always makes me worry. It doesn't, if he did it, it's a terrible thing he did. But for me, it's like adding all these little pieces together on his resume so far and what I've seen. You know,
I don't think he's ever going to walk away from it. I think it's always going to be there. Even if he wins, I think it's still going to be there in a lot of people's minds because it's unresolved, right? And I think that unknown and that unresolved is always going to sit poorly with people. And you know what? I understand that point of view. I also understand the point of view of saying, why is this still being brought up when there's no new information? The reason
because it was never resolved.
Right, exactly.
People always need something to talk about, plus they're losing. So.
The reason it was brought up today was because this was the first time that they talked to Bob Quinn, that the media talked to Bob Quinn since the report was made. Right? So he had not talked to the media since that report
came out. Probably should have talked to the media after that happened.
That's another good opportunity for him that he probably should have.
I know, but the Lions, they don't.
They put out a statement, and that...
That's going to be a discussion for another time about how the Lions deal with their employees.
Sure.
And how they protect certain guys.
Sure. But that's why it was brought up today, was my point. Because there was questions like, why is this being brought up now? It was brought up now because this was their first chance to talk to Quinn about it, right? I do think it can follow him, but again, it's unresolved, and there's no new information, and there's not going to be new information unless something, you know, out of the ordinary happens. So I don't know if we're going to hear about it again, but it makes sense that it came out today, like it or not.
All right, Nick Andrews, I'm going to hold you to the specifics of the way he asks this question because we have a lot more to cover. Nick Andrews, yeah. Bob Quinn is a student. Grade him. Pass, fail, needs improvement. That's all you can say. One of those three things in the following subjects. Hires / fires.
Fail. I don't like his. I think he can do better.
Drafting.
Very much a pass.
Signings, tags, trades.
Signings.
He's got the slashes. I think it's all together.
Oh, all of it together?
That's the way I read it. Okay. I mean, that could be incorrect by me.
Well, he asked me to grade him, and then I asked him if I could not give assigned grades, and he said, then you can do pass, fail.
That's all I'm asking for. See, you're talking too much already.
Sorry.
You can do them one by signings. Pass, fail.
Pass.
Tag.
It's pass.
Trades.
I think that is a major success. That's the highest marker.
Too many words. Public relations.
It doesn't really have any.
Once again, you're not following the rules.
Needs improvement.
All right. Budgeting / cap.
That's a high pass.
All right. Moving on.
Maybe I'll go back to signings and say it needs improvement. I'm sorry.
You fail in this assignment.
I agree with that. All right. I agree with that.
Moving on to the season review. PFF graded out the top 10 Lions of the year. I'm going to read. This is more than 10.
No, yeah. Here's what they did. Sorry. They did the top 5 defense and then top 5 offense, but there was a couple more defenders that were higher than the fourth and fifth offense of guys. So I added those in, and then I added in a couple more offensive linemen and stuff at the end just because anyone that would have had a grade above average is kind of what I was going with.
All right, so everybody's got a grade above average. It's everybody you've heard of, and it's very obvious. There's the only, I mean, to me, only Riddick's, and that's not even a surprise. Moving on. Unless you want to dig into it anymore.
No, no, I think...
Damon Harrison was the highest, no surprise there.
I think the things that stood out to me were the three of the top four were defensive linemen, mm-hmm. right? And then...
Very heavy-handed over at PFF.
And then the one... defensive lineman. And then the one non-defensive lineman was Tracy Walker, which is a very...
I guess that's the most surprising one out of all.
Yeah.
Although he did play well in the second half of the season. We'll see what he does next year. Maybe he'll have a starting role.
He played around 28% of snaps. So I like that he scored that high for a while.
All right. The end of the season awards. Who would you give out as your offensive player of the year?
Well, now, we wrote an article.
Matthew Stafford.
We wrote an article at Lions Wire. Ty Finch wrote it one. So I'll give you Ty Finch's answers. I want you to give me your answers.
All right.
So, offensive player of the year.
For me, well, it's got to be Kenny Galladay. Well, no, you know, I'm going to go Kerryon Johnson.
Ty went with Kerryon Johnson as well.
All right, all right. Yeah, okay, I mean, good. Even though it was an abbreviated season.
Defensive player of the year.
Well, snaps.
Yeah, so that's what he picked as well.
These
so,
aren't surprising.
Right. Rookie of the year.
Well, I would also have to say Kerryon Johnson as well.
Okay. He went with Hand.
All right.
He picked Deshaun Hand. And then, just of note, Hand was the top rookie defensive tackle. He was the third best rookie defender in the league. Tracy Walker was the highest rookie defender in the league, according to PFF. He would have been the fourth highest safety if he would have had more than those 28 snaps. Kerryon Johnson finished fourth among rookie running backs. Ragnow finished fourth amongst rookie guards.
Breakout performer.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Romeo Okwara.
Oh, nice. Good one. He picked Galladay for this one.
Well, I figured that would be the easy one, and I didn't know if that would be considered a breakout because everybody's been high on him for the last 3 years.
But he went from 600 yards to over 1,000. Mm-hmm. So I think remember, this is only his second year. So
the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Who's the most disappointing player?
How could you go further than Matthew Stafford?
Oh, okay. He went with LeGarrette Blount.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
I understand that as well. Best game of the season.
We just saw it. 31-0 over the Packers. Great fake field goal.
Okay.
Well, the best game's obviously the game against the Patriots.
That's what he picked.
You know, like, it's too bad it happened after two really terrible games to open the season. Or three really? No, two. And, you know, because that gave everybody some hope. Dangled the carrot, as the Lions often do.
Sure. Right. So as far as our pick'ems,
yeah, this is terrible.
We finished 8-8 for the second year in a row. So far in our podcast tenure,
and who was it that wrote the tweet? And that was he's exactly right. Jimmy. I should have just went the Lions.
It was Jimmy.
That's right. And it was the most Lions thing they could do was win that game. I don't know. I did that twice this year. And that cost me. I would have won 10-6. If it weren't for that game, and then there was an obvious loss.
Well, you did the same thing last year.
You got
cute with your picks.
Yeah,
at the end of last year.
Going gets tough. I crumble like a deck of cards. Oh, that's the wrong metaphor.
I am not as good. I finished late real well. So that kind of leads us into our next point. Now that the season is over, we now have the opponents finalized for 2019. We have our home and home with the Bears, the Vikings, the Packers. But we have home games against Cowboys, Giants, Chiefs, Chargers, and Bucks. Bucks is the one that was added because they finished in last place in their division.
South.
Yep. So what do you think of that slot?
Yeah, that's fine. It's good. There's going to be... Half the playoff teams from this year aren't going to make the playoffs next year. Mm-hmm. That's just the way the things go.
Yeah.
Chiefs and Chargers are good teams. It's good that we're going to have them at home. The Cowboys, same thing. Here's three playoff teams we get to have at home.
Yep, that's what I was liking about it, too. Away is the Washington, the Eagles, the Broncos, the Cardinals, and the Raiders. Not as scary.
It's surprising that – it's not surprising because the schedule has to work out the way it works out, but they're going to be playing at Arizona 2 years in a row.
They've played against Arizona like 7 of the last 9 years or something silly like that. Fun fact, Raiders don't have a home in 2019.
Yeah, they didn't re-up the lease, so maybe we'll be in London.
That's what we don't know.
They can force them over there, or they can. I know San Diego has offered
in
Qualcomm.
Reno, Nevada said they could do something, which
they'd want a bigger stadium than that, I would assume. I don't know why they just don't stick them in London for a year, because then they can finally prove, like, hey, will this work or won't it work? Just screw over the Raiders for a year.
Eight games.
Yeah, well, for a full season. Mm-hmm. All right, so now we're going to talk about the roster real quick. We have some added futures contracts. One that I love and I hate, I got a love-hate relationship with, Connor Cook, quarterback. Means it's the end of the road for Connor. I'm happy he's around, though.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, the Lions had to make a decision on Jake Rudock or Connor Cook, and they went with Connor Cook.
It's crazy. Well, I've always liked Connor Cook, but then again, my opinion's very biased.
Quinn did say at his press conference that some of the practice squad players they had didn't sign futures contracts with the Lions because they were going to play in the new football league.
Sweet. The AAF, the All-American football, we're going to see that. It's going to kick off 1 week after the Super Bowl.
And so it's possible that Jake Rudock is playing in that one.
Oh, wow. Oh, poor Jake.
I don't know. I know that that's a couple of the guys from the Lions practice squad are expected to be on that.
Well, I hope he's a starter down there. running back Mark Thompson.
Yeah, he played at Florida. He's a big guy. He's like a house. He has some issues on pass protection, but he's a running back.
All right, five guys off the practice squad. The Jack, linebacker Garrett Dooley, wide receiver Deontez Alexander. We see him at all during the year?
No.
Offensive tackle Jaron Jones, defensive end Jonathan Wynn, and safety David Jones.
Dooley's the interesting guy because he played Jack. Alexander has trouble getting off blocks. The other guys we just talked about because they were just signed recently. And then two more names were added after that.
Yep, punter Ryan Santoso, we saw him during the
training camp
a lot. Yep. And then running back Kerwin James.
Yeah, Santoso is the interesting name because he's got the giant leg, but accuracy issues.
Yeah, he wasn't that great. Big Dom, no Bo Nunn on that list. I missed out on that one. Scott Sometimes Warheed, I'm wrong. I'm not right all the time.
Scott Warheed said he was interested to hear your takes on Bo Nunn
Well, there's not really much take to have. I wish he would have played better when he was a starter. All right. Big Dom, who is your way too early prediction for backup quarterback?
Well, right now it looks like Connor Cook, right?
Well, I don't know. I think they're just going to see what he's got and then jettison him.
Yep. You know, again, in the
should go play in that AAF.
Maybe, right? Look, it also depends on who your offensive coordinator is. If they bring in Coder, it could be Fitzmagic, right? Who was in Tampa last year.
Oh, jeez,
yeah. If it's Gase, it could be Osweiler, who was his backup last year.
All right.
If it's Godsey, Tom Savage was Godsey's quarterback.
Those are all horrible options.
Right, because there's not a lot of great options in free agency. So Connor Cook actually isn't terrible. Interesting is, this is a terrible offensive coordinator. I'm sorry. It's a terrible quarterbacks class, but they may have to dive in and grab somebody at the end, you know, because, look, I could see them bring in one of these other guys and then and get an undrafted free agent or maybe draft a guy late, but this quarterback spot is not going to be upgraded this season by anybody.
More than useless information. I had a bet going with a buddy when Case Keenum and Brock Osweiler came out of college. And I famously took Brock Osweiler, and I was right for a good 7 years. And then I just got crushed, like in year 8 or 9. All right. Anyhow, Sean Sweeney. If we bring back Lang for one more season, would Bob Quinn restructure his deal? $11 million seems like a high price for him, given his recent health.
I would have said no before today.
Because he said he would. Today. I thought that's what I heard. Yeah, that he would be.
Today he said that he basically felt like he was stealing from the Lions because they paid him more than he would.
Jeez, TJ, don't say these things.
Right?
Take the money while you can. You're not going to make that money forever unless he becomes a successful businessman.
I'm with TJ. I think TJ earned that money being a veteran, but it's very possible. If he wants to play, that may be something that they need to do.
Glenn P. Reeves Maben has been a letdown so far for me personally. Yeah. I love the pick when it was made, but he's not really established himself. Do you think he'll get a shot to become a starter next to Davis, or has his chance been come and gone?
I think he had a chance this year, but the injuries really hurt him. And when the injuries hurt him, they really leaned on Christian Jones, and Christian Jones got better as the season went on.
He did. If I had to say, you were wrong on that one.
I'm not a huge fan of Christian Jones. And I still think that that's a position they could upgrade,
but he wasn't bad.
But
could
I think
have done worse than him.
Yes. And so, you know, if you got Jared, and then you've got Christian, and you've got Reeves Maben all in the fold next year, and if you add another guy, that makes Reeves Maben's job harder. Could he develop into a starter? It's possible. But right now, he's pretty significantly behind the eight ball based on how Jones finished the season, in my mind.
Line for life. Which Lions free agents do you think we keep and which do we let go?
I wrote an article on this, and it's up at Lions Wire. I also included this in my roster stack that I also started up again this year. I got a January edition out right now. If you're not familiar with my roster stack, it's one of my most proud pieces that I do. So please take time to check that out. Of the guys that are free agents this year that are probably in contention to be brought back, I would say Levi Toiolo. He had a nice end of the season. I think Don Mulbach is very much in the conversation. They do this every year with him. I think Zach Zenner proved himself, and he would be a nice option to add to the backfield that they have. It would make them really only have to add one really good running back instead of maybe two. Beyond that, though, Aquara, I mean, is an automatic. You have to give the RFA, you have to give him probably a second-round tender on his RFA. And I think Ricky Jean's going to be in that conversation as well. Just because he has that leadership that I think they're really looking for. I think Eli Harold is a guy they'd like. I just don't know if it's possible he played his way into a better contract than what Detroit will be offering him. But those are the guys I like that I think should be brought back.
All right. My favorite name of the week, Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
As Bob Quinn said, he was in trade negotiations for three or four top tight ends.
Yeah.
Which included the Gronk, as we now know. Mm-hmm. Wondering who might have been available. Gronk obviously wasn't going to happen, but that's one of the three or four, I would assume. No chance Kelsey could be moved. Ertz maybe in the Tate deal, but I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
Delanie Walker was injured. Maybe Cameron Brate, and I've heard about this last couple days. Anyone else I can think of is on a rookie contract and too valuable to move.
Yeah, you know, I looked at the guys that were in the final year of their contracts who will be free agents this offseason that he might have been interested in, and I can't think of anyone. Brate's a guy who I think was very much could have been in the mix because they have O.J. Howard in Tampa Bay. But I didn't have a really good feel for any of them. It probably would have been somebody we're not really even thinking about that would have been available. But like I said, of the guys that are out there, the one name I thought was probably on there was Brate.
Next question, if T.J. Hockenson, who is the Iowa tight end, yep, declares, I don't think there's any chance Bob Quinn doesn't find a way to get him. Thoughts?
Excuse me.
Jeez. Cough right into the microphone, why don't.
There's a nice tight end class. I really think a guy like Hockenson is going to be in the top three, if not the top one. And I don't think they're going to take him an eight. And I don't know if he'll fall to the second round. But if he did, I think, man, he would be phenomenal. Other names are his Iowa teammate, Noah Fant, and then the Alabama tight end as well. Irv Smith is another
really good guy. Yeah, Irv Smith Jr.
I like him a lot. But then after him, there's still a handful of guys that are really good.
Tight end's one of your favorite positions to scout. I've learned that over the years. David Morgan, Michael Roberts, don't pretend like
true.
It's not.
That's true. All no, right. no, I, you're right. You're right.
See, it's sad. I know you better than you do.
But I really like this tight end class. I do think that they're going to get a guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they got a guy in the second round.
All right, let's squeeze in a little more draft talk here. We got a question from Golden Delicious,
yeah,
whose name now finishes second to Teddy Roosevelt. Are there any obvious trade partners for the number 8 pick?
Not really.
Especially since the quarterback teams are now drafting ahead of them.
Correct, right?
Giants and Jags.
Yeah, and so that makes things a little bit harder. I don't have the list in front of me of who's picking where, but I know there's at least one more quarterback team behind us. But the thing is you're probably trying to jump ahead of the Jags and the Giants anyways to get a quarterback. So that kind of takes Detroit out of the mix.
Yeah, they're going to want to get ahead of that.
Yeah, and really when you're talking about trading up or who might trade up into 8, quarterback is really the only obvious position that you can say that. So is there any obvious partners? No, I think they're in the wrong spot to be in an obvious trade partner. Will they explore it? Absolutely, they will explore trading out of that spot. But I think if they stay at 8, there's going to be some really nice defensive players that are going to be really tempting for the Lions. And so, Either way, they're going to be, I think, eight's still a pretty good spot to be in.
All right. Number one picks Arizona Cardinals, who already have Josh Rosen. Number two, the Niners, Garoppolo. Number three, the Jets with Darnold. Number four, the Raiders with, who knows, probably Derek Carr.
Yeah, it's got to be Carr.
Tampa Bay, they're sticking with Jameis, even though they don't have a head coach. Giants have Eli Manning, but everybody talks about how they need a quarterback. Jacksonville with Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
The Lions with Matthew Stafford. Buffalo's at nine with Josh Allen, who I'm still holding on to. It's not over for him yet. Number 10, Denver, who's got Case Keenum, but he might be a free agent this year.
Either way, they're probably looking. They're in the market.
Then it's Cincinnati with Andy Dalton, the Packers with Rodgers, Miami with Ryan Tannehill, but they might be a team looking to move up, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Blah, blah. It goes on.
So nobody's obvious, right? Most of the teams up front are going to be needing a quarterback. It's very odd, though, that there's a that the first three teams all have established or all have their rookie quarterbacks this year, or rookie and sophomore, I guess.
Nick Andrews, I see at the end of the year three as the best time to actually grade a draft. So for Bob Quinn's first crop, I think Graham's the best pick, Graham Glasgow. Mm-hmm. Williams is the worst, and Jake Rudock is the biggest bust based on value. What say you?
I think you could argue Decker might have been the best pick. I like Glasgow just because you get a little bit more value for a starter. Probably one of those two for sure are going to be your guys that are the best. I think your worst pick, while most people are thinking Antoine Williams, was probably Jimmy Landis.
Jimmy Landis.
Yeah, right? That Landis pick was pretty terrible. As far as the bust, I would put Williams in the bust category because he went from being in contention to starting one year and then cut the next. So
it's hard, unless they're a first, second, third round quarterback. Correct. It's hard to say the quarterback would be a bust pick because every team draft, a lot of quarterbacks get drafted and a lot of quarterbacks get just shuffled through because everybody's looking for the next great quarterback. Yeah.
I do think Landis was probably the worst pick.
Right. The amiable Lions fan. I find it difficult this time of year to compare the overall talent of a draft class to past classes or individual players. That's true. Where does Greedy rank in your mind in past defensive back classes? What about Ed Oliver? Can we grab a guy at eight this year that would have been a top pick previously?
I am not convinced that Greedy's the top cornerback in this class yet. And I don't think he's the top defensive back. Deontay Thompson is the top defensive back. So I would stick with him. I think Ed Oliver is in play at eight, which is something I wouldn't have thought of at the beginning of the season. So, well, I think we're probably short on time, man.
We're running low on time.
Let's save the free agency questions.
All right, we'll go after them next week.
Yeah, those are the ones we had from last week, so we'll put them off another week. I think we need to start next week. We'll start breaking down the team in even more detail. And maybe we'll have an offensive coordinator we can talk about as well.
All right, we got a shout out.
Yeah, man, just a bunch of letters, so I don't know what your real name is. I'm sorry.
I love the name DHKZHKL.
They wrote us a very nice review. Said some nice things about us, which we really appreciate. We also have some more 5-star ratings because we're up to 112.
Yeah, 112. 109 of them are 5 stars. It's fantastic.
And those always help. We've also had people reach out to me asking how they rate and what they can do. And right now, if you don't know, the only way is on iTunes for us to really successfully get ratings. We don't see a lot of the other stuff. So iTunes is what
although
we
are available on Google Play and Stitcher, but I don't need to tell any of you that because you're already listening.
Right. And so
Bunch of other ones that I just get notified about all the time. You're on Podbean. You're on that. I'm like, all right, well, great.
I just can't say enough about the support this season.
It's been great for everybody who rates and who doesn't rate.
I feel like we've been growing, and I feel like we continue to grow because I keep seeing new people asking questions. And so we'd really appreciate that. Talked last week about people have been spreading the word and telling us other people to listen. We appreciate that a lot. We will keep going hard on this through the off season. This podcast does not slow down.
Yeah, we'll be around just about every week. We usually take a week or two off between now and next season. So,
But
who knows when that's going to be? That'll be a surprise,
right? And we really are going to start getting into some deeper stuff in with the draft and free agency. Draft is really my Christmas, so we'll spend a lot of time on that.
All right, that's it. We are out of time. We will see you next week. And until then, let's go Lions, even though they're not.